This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas. Danny Carroll, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
My pleasure, Jeremy.
You're in Dublin, did you say?
My wife's an American diplomat, so she shifts around, and I'm based in Bombay. So at the moment, she's in Dublin. So I'm in Dublin at the moment, but my permanent residence is in Bombay.
What's it like living there? I've never been to India. I kind of want to visit, but I can't figure out if I do.
Well, they don't call it incredible India for nothing, mate. I mean, it's incredible. It's amazing. I went there for 6 months in the beginning of in the mid 1990s, and I'm still there. So, if that gives you, I mean, it's growing on me, right?
The closest I've been to India is above it. I've flown over it from China.
Yeah, you should try. You should try stopping over one time. It's a really cool place.
I suppose it has that Africanness to it, that it's wild and also advanced at the same time.
Well, I've only been to Africa twice, Jeremy, right? And that was, I did a little trip between Durban and Pietermaritzburg a couple of times.
Oh, so you've actually been to my country?
I've been to your country, yeah. I came over twice to run Comrades, right? So.
Oh wow! Okay, you get 10. You get 10 points immediately.
I finished it on the down run. I did 11 hours and 41 minutes, and I got
11 hours.
It's a 12-hour cutoff, right?
Oh, was it 12? Okay, was it? So the cutoff was 12 hours. So you just made it.
I got in the Guinness Book of Records that year. Comrades got in the Guinness Book of Records in, that was in 2010, and I went back to do the up run in 2011, and I did that in 11 hours and 55 minutes and 9 seconds. the bailer bus was sort of chasing me down the road, right? So
did you think you were going to make it at about 11 hours?
Yeah, I always knew I was going to make it. There's no chance of me not making it. I even stopped there to help people on the way that were sort of suffering from cramps and stuff, right? Going up the hotel and whatever. And
well, your balls are bigger than mine. I'm too scared to run the Comrades. I'll rather drive it.
It's insane. I drove it the day before. It took like 2.5 hours to drive it, right? I mean, it's no joke. It's no joke, yeah.
It's almost 100 kilometers.
It's not called the ultimate human race for nothing, mate. And it's insane.
Sorry, I'm going to ask you another question about the Comrades. Which did you prefer, the up or down run?
The down run is easier on the day and more painful afterwards. And the up run is more painful on the day and easier afterwards. So you can take a pick. They're both insane.
Well, I really hope you do visit my side of the world again, and I'll take you for lunch.
Oh, I'll take you up on that.
This has got nothing to do with what we're going to talk about. I'm trying to find a segue and I can't.
The segue could be, oh, Danny, you seem to have a penchant for impossible challenges, and now you're in the healthcare cancer space. How did that come about?
Right. Okay, there we go. There's the segue.
Yeah, so I've been studying cancer for the last 20 years, testing solutions for cancer. And I found the Holy Grail in 2012. Was that like 12 years ago now, right? Wow. Just after I ran Comrades, yeah. So.
And what is the Holy Grail?
The Holy Grail is a body of knowledge, more commonly known as Germanic New Medicine. The founder, a German medical doctor called Dr. Richard Geert Hummer, renamed as Germanische Heilkund, or in English, Germanic healing knowledge. He sadly passed away in 2017. He had a 92% success rate at healing terminally ill cancer patients. A court audited Jeremy. He had 6,500 of his cancer patients' records taken by law enforcement on one of the many occasions that he was put in prison. And they called up all of his terminally ill cancer patients. And
he was put in prison?
He spent like 3.5 years in prison.
Why? And,
they removed his medical license in 1986 for refusing to prescribe chemotherapy and refusing to report that his medical discoveries were not correct. So they took away his medical license, and then they kept arresting him. They put him in prison many times, right? Last time in 2004. He was put in prison. He was arrested in Spain, extradited to France, and put in prison for 3 years because a French doctor who he'd never met got hold of his medical discoveries and was helping French patients to recover from cancer using his medical discoveries. He'd never met the patients or the doctor. So he was put in prison for 3 years for conspiracy to practice medicine without a license.
No.
He had 12 attempts on his life, and they tried to put him in a mental institution 75 times in 30 years.
Well, based on that, I want to know more. He must have been over the target, surely.
My mate, seriously. So it's a like all amazing journeys. It starts off with a traumatic beginning. In 1970, so Dr. Hummer, just to give you some background, he was the youngest medical doctor to ever qualify to practice medicine in Germany. He was an internist or a medical researcher. He had loads of patents for scalpels and all sorts of stuff against his name. And then in 1978, his 19-year-old son was shot and murdered by an Italian crown prince. And 2 months later, he got a fast-growing tumour on his testicle called a rare form of cancer. Of course, they're all rare, right? But a very rare form of cancer called a testicular teratoma with metastasis to the stomach. So he was given a 1% chance to survive. He survived it because he had surgery, but he refused chemotherapy and radiation. So he just had surgery. And then he couldn't help thinking. I mean, he was in his late 40s at the time, and he'd been practicing medicine for over 20 years, and otherwise he was a healthy guy, right? And he couldn't help thinking that there must be a causal link between his son getting murdered and then him getting a very rare, fast-growing cancer on a reproductive organ, right? So at the time, he was the head of cancer research at a gynecological oncology unit in Germany, an offshoot of Munich University, a university called Tübingen University. He had 200 female terminally ill cancer patients that he was working with as part of his cancer research. Right, so he started to interview them to find out whether they'd gone through a similar type of emotional trauma to him before they got cancer. And out of 200 had. And what happened, Jeremy, is when he started putting these women into different categories, like ovarian cancer and cervical cancer and mammary gland breast cancer and intralateral breast cancer, what he basically observed was that the women in the same category had all suffered from the same type of trauma, right? So the women, for example, with ovarian cancer had all suffered from some form of profound loss, and all the women with mammary gland breast cancer had all had some, what he described as a nest or a care conflict where somebody in the family basically got sick. And so he started to see patterns emerging. Fast forward 39 years of research before he died in 2017, and working directly with over 50,000 cancer patients, basically what he concluded is that cancer is in fact not a disease. It's a survival biological program that's there to stop us from dying, to not actually kill us, right? So if you take his case, for example, his son was shot and murdered. And what he discovered is that the tumor that grew on his testicle was actually functional tissue. And if you research it on any of the WebMD or any of those sort of conventional medicine sites, right? I mean, they all acknowledge that the tissue is actually functional tissue. But what he learned along the journey is that the tumor on his testicle was actually designed to increase his testosterone and sperm production so that he had a better chance of getting his wife pregnant so he could replace the child he just lost. So the survival element of this specific program basically was progeny. What nature does, said, oh, God, you just lost a child, so we need to increase your capacity to be able to replace the child. So he got this testicular teratoma in his testicle that increased his testosterone and sperm production so he could get his wife pregnant. And what he also learned is that if he had he didn't know this at the time, right, because he was a traditional medical doctor. All of these biological programs, basically. They run in your subconscious mind, Jeremy, right? You don't sit and say, oh, my son's just died. I think I'm going to grow the size of my testicles so that I can increase my sperm and testosterone production so that I've got a better chance of getting my wife pregnant. Right? You know, you don't do that, right? I mean, what happens is all of these programs run in our subconscious mind. Let's give an example of a female biology for the ladies, Jeremy, right? So if you take the mammary gland in the breast, right, the biological purpose of a mammary gland is basically to lactate, to produce milk, right, to feed a baby. Now, obviously, once a woman stops breastfeeding, she stops lactating, right? So, that's the fundamental biological purpose of a mammary gland. Now, back in our day, before we lived in our so-called civilized society, basically the breast was the only instrument that a woman had in order to nurse a sick loved one, right? So what that same biological program stays in place. So imagine a woman's walking down the street. I don't know, she's probably on her phone, not paying attention. She's got a five-year-old child. She's no longer lactating, right? So she's not paying attention. The child pulls away, runs into the road and gets hit by a car. And all she hears is the screeching of the tires. And then she turns her head and she sees her child laying in the road. What's going to happen in that split second is that the subconscious mind says, oh, my God, we now got a sick child. And if she touches her breast, she will immediately feel a lump, what they call mammary or globular carcinoma in her breast, right? So basically what nature's done in that example, Jeremy, is reactivated the woman's ability to be able to lactate, right? So child gets hit by a car. The mother then has a crisis because she has a sick child, right? The biological purpose of that lump in her breast basically is to give her the ability to be able to lactate again so that she can offer her breast to her now sick five-year-old child and that she can lactate and she can nurse a child back to health again, right? That's nature's design. So in that situation, what she should do basically is do what nature designs, right? Offer a breast to the child, nurse the child back to health again. The child gets well quicker because obviously it's got breast milk in order to heal the child, right? And then once the child is back to health again, that lump in the breast is removed by something that we know as tuberculosis mycobacteria, which doctors again think is a disease. It's not basically the tissue is added so that she can lactate and nurse a child. And once the child is well again, then the tuberculosis mycobacteria and fungi basically rot that extra material and then they're removed and then the breast goes back to normal again. That's nature's design and purpose, right? But we've come so far from nature's design, right? I mean, it almost seems absurd. I mean, God, I've got to offer my breast to a sick child and nurse it. I mean, it seems ridiculous, right? But that's what nature's design is.
It's a little bit of a paradigm shift. So I need to try and wrap my head around what you're saying. Is the argument then of germanic new medicine that cancer and I guess other quote unquote illnesses, are they psychologically triggered? Is that the argument?
That's right. I mean, so the way we look at this today in both our conventional and our alternative healing systems, basically all of them are systems of symptomatic treatment, right? If I think, oh, the brain's the problem, right? And I can go and use bark flower remedies and I can address the symptoms of the emotions. Or if I use nutritional healing, I can look at the symptoms of the body, or I can, you know, I can use homeopathy for the environment of the body, or Ayurveda, or if I don't like conventional medicine, right? Or in conventional medicine, I can treat the tumor. But basically the way it works, so imagine the woman, right? So she's seen her child get hit by a car. That emotional trauma, that crisis goes bang, bang, hits the brain. And it affects a specific relay in the brain. And the brain says, oh, crisis, we have a sick child. Message to the breast. Reactivate mammary gland production so that we can produce milk, so that we can feed the child who's just been hit by the car and nurse the child back to health again, right? So every change in our biology, whether it's from a runny nose or a sore throat or a breast cancer or a testicular cancer or a lung cancer, every change in our biology, basically the way it works is that the cause of the problem is a life crisis, right? And then bang, it hits the brain, and the brain is the processing center, and then the brain triggers signals to the organ. So the organ is only ever the symptom, right? And what the easiest way to learn this is that there's this concept in conventional medicine called phantom limb pain. So phantom limb pain is, let's say I get gangrene in my toe, right? And doctors say, oh, Danny, what you need to do is you need to amputate your foot, right? Or amputate your leg so that the gangrene can't spread up your leg and kill you, right? Now, what happens is after the limb is amputated, I still get pain in the limb that was amputated, right? So I had gangrene in my foot and the leg's amputated, and I still get gangrene pain in the foot that's no longer on my leg, right? And you sit there and say, how's that possible? How is it possible to get pain in a limb that's no longer even there, right? And basically the answer, Jeremy, is that the pain is not in the limb, right? The pain is in the brain, right? So if you want to address health problems by attacking the symptoms, essentially the only real solution to any of these problems basically is to have your head cut off, right? Now, Jeremy, I'm not recommending that, right? Having your head chopped off is not a good thing to do, right?
But it could lead to a few problems.
It could lead to a few problems, right? So, you know, audience, I'm not recommending you have your head chopped off, right? But if you want to address health problems by attacking the symptoms, it's the only way to do it, right? Because all the biological programs that run, whatever, you take breast cancer, right? So you get a woman, she gets breast cancer. So what do? They have a mastectomy, right? Now, there's this concept called recurrent breast cancer. That's where you get breast cancer on a breast that's no longer there. Right. So I have the breast removed, right? Which actually does nothing, right? Because the biological program doesn't run in the organ. The organ is just a symptom of the problem, right? I mean, in business, right, Jeremy, we're in business, right? In business, we are taught that in day one, you can never solve any problem in life or in business by addressing the symptom of a problem. Right. Now, that applies to health as well, right? You cannot solve any health problem by addressing the symptoms. So if I have a nest conflict, my child gets hit by a car, bang, I get breast cancer, I have my breast removed, right? Well, I mean, that's a problem because now I can't breastfeed the child, right? Because I've had my breast removed, right? But then if I have another nest or care conflict, as Dr. Hummer called it, and basically then the biological program, because it runs in the brain, I'm going to get breast cancer on a breast that's no longer there. So I'm going to start seeing a lump under the skin where the breast was removed, because the biological program runs in the brain, right? So it still sends the message to the breast to say, right, let's restart production because I've had another crisis at home, nest or care conflict within the home, right? So addressing the symptom to health problems can never work, right? I found these medical discoveries in 2012. I started my journey of looking for the holy grail of health and wellness in 2004, right? You'll find, if you go online, you'll find a TED presentation I did on nutritional healing in 2010. I tried everything, right? I mean, I turned vegan for 5 years following the nutritional hypothesis. I practiced with bark flower remedies for best parts of a decade. I studied all of the alternative modalities, anything that gave promise to a solution, right? And what happened in 2012, this was actually when I was vegan, right? I had, this is when I was marathon running. So this sort of dovetails into it's when I was running ultra marathons, right? In 2012, for 6 months, I had my entire body riddled with golf ball sized knots, right? So you could see like these golf balls in my calf muscles and in my thighs and in my arms and in my back. And I was in physio, right? And what you don't want to do this, right? So in physio, what the physio does, he gets his elbows like this, right? And he puts his body weight on your muscles, right? Of his elbows, and he irons out the muscles irons out the knots, right? And I'm telling you, it's excruciatingly painful. I've got a high pain threshold, but I struggled with this one, right? And what happened is 2 days later, I go back to the physio again, and the knots I had ironed out before, they all come back again, right? So I'm on this like excruciating merry-go-round for like a 6 month period. I had an interesting challenge in my life at that point. I split up my ex-wife in 2011. I met a new life partner. She was an American diplomat, and she was posted in Bombay, right? And she was on a two-year posting, and her next posting was in Santiago de Chile. That's like 10,000 miles or a 40-hour journey from Bombay, right? So nobody in their right mind is going to do a long-distance relationship between South America and India, right? So we said, okay, fine. When you leave, that's it. You know, we'll split up and we'll go separate ways. So 6 months before she was due to leave, I had all of these knots in my body, right? And we got to the weekend before she was due to exit, and we tried to terminate the relationship. Trouble is with relationships where you have no commitment, no expectation, and it's a breeding ground for soulmates, right? Because there's no expectations, right? So we sat there on a Friday night and we said, oh God, you know, we can't terminate this relationship, right? So we said, okay, fine, let's attempt this outrageous, most ridiculous long distance relationship you can ever imagine, right? And bearing in mind, at this time I was vegan and I was doing bark flower remedies and I was following all of the protocols and all this, right? And none of it worked. So I woke up on the Saturday morning, Jeremy, and all of the knots in my body had disappeared. And I'm like, wow, how did that happen? What just happened, right? So for 6 months, right, I mean, physio and having all these knots ironed out my muscles. That was the time of the Bombay Marathon. I had 3 weeks to train for the Bombay Marathon. I'd put like 10 kilos in weight on because I've been sitting on my ass doing nothing for 6 months, right? So I trained for the Bombay Marathon in 3 weeks, knocked off all of that extra weight, and I finished the Bombay Marathon with 3 weeks of training, 11 minutes short my personal best, right? Amazing. It was just mind-blowing. So I didn't really know. All I knew was the difference between Friday night and Saturday morning was I'd resolved the conflict of not terminating the relationship with my soulmate, right? And all of a sudden, boom, knots just disappeared, right? That's when I didn't know why it happened, but all I knew, all I gained from that experience was the power between life's challenges and the mind and the body. You know, the only difference between Friday night and Saturday morning was I agreed not to terminate the relationship with my then girlfriend and now wife, right? So I planned to do a PhD to study this mind-body connection to see whether I could find out what on earth was going on. And I was looking for a university that had both a psychology and a medical specialization. I didn't find one, right? Seems to be that quite rare. And I was planning to build a bridge between the two of them. And then on the journey of looking for this university, I found this German medical doctor who was reported to have a 92% success rate healing terminal cancer patients using a form of mind-body medicine. By the time I got to finding Dr. Hummer, I mean, I was best parts of a decade down the rabbit hole. Every healing modality says, yeah, yeah, this is the holy grail. Yeah, yeah, this is the holy grail, right? And none of them deliver. Yeah. I mean, nutritional healing, it didn't work. And bark flower remedies didn't work. And, you know, I tried all these spiritual healing and energy healing and all these things, right? And none of them delivered on the promise, right? So by the time I got to finding Dr. Hummer, I mean, I was skeptical as all hell. I mean, I'm skeptical anyway, right? I mean, I don't believe anything that anybody tells me, right? Until I go out and actually experience it for myself. So I spent the last 12 years learning and testing those medical discoveries of Dr. Hummer. And some of the stories I could tell you was absolutely mind-blowing. It's extraordinary.
So the idea is that certain illnesses, quote unquote, or disease,
except for scurvy and stuff like it was just like a nutritional deficiency.
Well, I mean, what
or poisoning, you know?
Yeah. So if I drink rat poison, I'm going to get sick. But what about, for example, if there's mold on the wall and we know that the spores can make you sick?
That's an interesting one. When we get to things like mold, the way that our subconscious mind works is when we have an emotional trauma, basically our subconscious mind takes a snapshot of everything in the environment and stores down reminders of that of those experiences. It's an alarm system, right? When I was in Bali in 1997, I hired a scooter to get around Bali, right? Now my girlfriend, we were on the back, and I was driving down the highway, and this 20 meter sort of 4-inch long track in the road opened up, and my front wheel went down into this track, and we got sort of thrown off the bike, right? In 2013, I bought a Vespa to get around Bombay because traffic is insane. You've got over like 22 million people living on a small island, right? Every time I saw, you know, two pieces of tarmac that joined or two pieces of cement that joined on the road, I used to get panic attacks. No idea why. It lasted for about, it was young in my learning of Dr. Hammer's medical discoveries, right? So what my subconscious mind had stored down was that experience in Bali when my front wheel got caught in this track. So every time my subconscious mind saw a line in the road, basically I'd get panic attacks, right? It put me into fight or flight. My subconscious mind, I've forgotten about that instant, right? My subconscious mind saying, Danny, wake up, wake up, wake up. Last time you saw a line in the road, you got thrown off the bike, right? And you got hurt. Now, I had those panic attacks for, I think, about a year, right? And then as soon as I remembered that instant in Bali, oh, God, right, yeah. Front wheel went down that track and basically we got thrown off the bike. So my subconscious mind saying the line in the road is dangerous, right? Because my front wheel got trapped down there. And then as soon as I consciously connected that incident in 97 in Bali with the line in the road, basically you can use your conscious mind to overrule your subconscious mind, right? So then my conscious mind said, okay, it was that incident in Bali in 97, right, when you got thrown off your bike. That's why the line in the road is dangerous, right? My subconscious mind said, danger, 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 right? It's putting me into panic attacks. So as soon as I consciously connected that incident with that line in the road, and bang, it just switched that track off, and I no longer got panic attacks anymore because my subconscious mind said, okay, Danny, you're awake now. You remember that incident back in 1997, right? So I don't need to keep reminding you because now you remember it, right? So what happens with things like mold is very often they become, I'm in a moldy room, right? And I have an emotional trauma of any description, and my subconscious mind stores down mold as a reminder or a track. And each time I'm in a moldy space, right, then it says, danger, danger, danger. It does the same with like things like pollen and stuff like that, or dairy and pollen.
So it's a type of programming.
So your subconscious mind basically is trying to protect you from dangers that you've experienced, right? So I'll give you another example. It's a theoretical example. Say you're walking down a street, right? You're walking down a dark street, street lights are off, street's lined with cars, and somebody jumps out from behind that car and bashes you over the head and steals all your money, right? Knocks you out unconscious, right? In that split second that you get bashed over the head, the subconscious mind is going to take a snapshot of that environment and say, right, dark street, lined with cars, no street lights. And if you're ever in that similar environment again, then your subconscious mind, immediately your heart will start racing, your mouth will go dry, you start getting a panic attack, right? That your subconscious mind is saying, Danny, be careful. Last time you walked down a dark street when a street light's lined with cars, you got bashed over the head and somebody stole your money. So it's danger, right? So it's an early danger warning sign of previous dangerous incidents that you've experienced, right? Or previous traumatic incidents, right? I mean, say you live in a countryside in the UK and you have your first sexual experience in a haystack, right? And it goes horribly wrong, right? Which can happen, right, with your first sexual experience. I mean, you can imagine all of the things that can go wrong in that situation. Now, in what happens in that is your subconscious mind stores down the memory of that experience. And what's in that environment? Pollen. Right. So each year when the farmers start cutting the fields and then you've got pollen everywhere, then you get hay fever. Your subconscious mind saying pollen. Oh, yeah, that's a reminder of, because it makes you a nose running is what Dr. Hammer called a stink conflict. Right. A situation stinks or sucks. Right. I mean, not getting it up when you're on your first sexual experience or shooting your load in your pants, right? I mean, that stinks, right? So in future, every time pollen goes up, then your subconscious mind has put pollen as a reminder of your bad sexual experience in the haystack. And basically then you'll get a sinus infection, what they call hay fever.
And it's a type of pattern recognition.
It's a pattern recognition. It's how the subconscious mind works. The subconscious mind is a strange animal and takes an awful lot of study to really get your head around, right? But that's how it basically works, right? Let's say when I was walking down the street, right, and I got bashed over the head, right? God forbid my subconscious mind, you know, the guy jumped out from behind a white pickup truck, Jeremy, right? Now, in future, every time, if I don't recall that when the guy jumped out from behind a white pickup truck, that when I got bashed over the head, if my subconscious mind stores the white pickup truck as a reminder of that dangerous experience, then in future, I will always have an irrational fear of white pickup trucks. I mean, it's like, what the hell, yeah? Why am I scared? Black pickup truck, no problem. White pickup truck, why do I have an irrational fear? Why do I have panic attacks when I see a white pickup truck? Because that's how the subconscious mind is stored to the white pickup truck when I got bashed over the head. And now each time I see a white pickup truck, I get panic attacks. That's the way it works.
Okay, so what happens in a situation where there is, for example, collective illness? When seasons change, for example, you'll see lots of people getting a cold. Flu. I don't think COVID is a real thing, but what is a real thing is that flu-y type symptom that we always get when winter comes around. What's going on there?
Whenever you have a collective symptoms, you have a collective conflict, right? If you go to somewhere like Mexico in 2009, where there was a mass outbreak of swine flu or whatever, right? I mean, basically bronchitis and those type of symptoms. I mean, the collective conflict in that situation basically was that there were mafia and gangs basically kidnapping citizens. I mean over 7,000 citizens were kidnapped and murdered, right, for ransom money in Mexico. And in 2009, a president got elected on the promise of basically removing the mafia. So then what happens is when the bronchi is affected by either what's called a scare fright, which is the female version, or a territorial fear conflict, right? So you've got an entire population who are scared out of their wits of getting kidnapped by the mafia. And then the president comes in and says, I'm going to go and remove this mafia, right? And we're going to take them down, right? So then the entire population goes into healing at the same time. You see it after wars, right? You see mass tuberculosis outbreaks. You see it even after like COVID, right? Where you've got mass fear psychosis, right? And then, oh, COVID's gone, right? Oh, okay. So then everybody goes into the same healing symptoms at the same time because there's no longer a fear of the danger that's being presented in the same way for a cold. I mean, you know, a cold is depending on which symptoms you get. But if you take like the sinus type infections, I mean, again, that's a stinking conflict, right? And the people in society who suffer from that stink conflict are probably going to be the people who hate cold weather, right? So then, you know, oh, bloody cold, I hate the cold. That'd be me, right? Oh, I hate the cold weather, right? So then when the cold weather comes, then basically the stink conflict, then the nose starts running and everybody, you've got a collective resolution of the same conflict.
I recently flew back from China. It was a very long flight to Cape Town. And I mean, around 20 hours or so, the stopover in Dubai and a lot of sleepless time spent on the plane, terrible food, all sorts of different experiences happening in a very short space of time. And within a couple of days after being back here in South Africa, I got a bit of a cold and it's pretty much gone now. Now, if I'm following correctly, there would have been some sort of psychological trigger that would have
given me that.
I'm sorry.
It stinks or sucks, right? Flying 20 hours, losing sleep, shitty food, right? I mean, our whole experience stinks or sucks, right? So then when you get home, you resolve that stinking conflict. And then basically then the healing symptoms start and then you start getting runny nose and sneezing.
And of course, part of that psychology, I suppose, is always the fear that something's going to go wrong when you're up in the sky for a long period of time.
Which will affect your bronchi, which is why you didn't get bronchitis, yeah.
What you're saying is, other than a physically induced toxicity of some sort like poison or an injury, it's pretty much psychological.
Everything, I mean, except for external poisoning and nutritional-based issues like scurvy, which is like a lack of vitamin C, But yeah, everything else is psychological, and it's part of a survival, but it's there to help you survive. I mean, when you talk about the nose, right? I mean, you know, if you're living in a jungle, a sense of smell is very important, right? So basically, when you're in a dangerous situation, your sinuses will ulcerate to give you a better sense of smell, so you can smell the danger, right? You know, you go out hunting, right? So yeah, you know what it's like. Same as the separation conflicts. I mean, they cause things like eczema, psoriasis, chicken pox, measles, hives, all external skin related conditions. I mean, separation, being separated from the pack is we lose the importance of that, right? But you know, right? You go out, if an animal gets separated from the pack, right, it's dead, right? So all of these biological programs are basically developed through an evolutionary process in order to help us survive.
You spoke about shitty food. Can I just state for the record that I think Emirates has the best food as planes go?
Well, I in COVID, because you're lucky you didn't have to travel in COVID, right? But I live in separate continent to my wife, so I had to travel a lot in COVID, got nasally raped more times than I can shake a stick at, but also had very limited options in terms of the number of airlines. I got kicked off of airlines because I wouldn't take that and all of that stuff, right? So I fly on Etihad, and I think Etihad is the bee's knees, mate. It's really...
Really?
Yeah.
I have never flown, so I'll have fabulous to take your word
So if, you, but, if you're looking for an airline, Etihad, in my experience, is banging, mate.
So you're saying it's better than Emirates? Because I think Emirates is probably the best airline.
It's better value than Emirates, because you get as good service and as good food at a lower cost.
But since we're on the topic, Emirates also has the best girls. There's no doubt about it.
If you're prepared to pay the premium for that, mate, then knock yourself out.
I flew KLM a few months ago, and it's an okay-ish airline, but all the air hostesses are taller than me because they're all Dutch.
I don't want to go into a lawsuit with KLM, so we'll... I will reserve comment on that one, Jeremy. Do you want to hear a really mad story?
Yes.
To just show you the power of this healing modality, right? So, I mean, I've had more cancers than you can shake a stick at. I've had lung cancer with a fully collapsed lung. I've had testicular cancer. I've had jaw cancer, which I'm about to tell you about. I've currently got skin cancer. I've had bone cancer, shoulder and arm, which is COVID related. Another one, right? But just to give you a mad one, right? So in 2019, I had a fight with my wife over American politics, which lasted approximately 5 seconds, right? And it triggered cancer in my jaw here. Now, because it was such a short argument, and this particular area of the jaw, it takes 3-4 days to start feeling the pain. And this is technical, but there are all three germ layers in this part of the biology. So the pain can be when you solve a problem or when a problem starts, right? So anyway, it took me a long time to find this problem. By the time I found the problem, I had a tumor on my jaw here, basically. So then when I found the problem, Jeremy, I could switch the cancer off, right? I switched the cancer off on my jaw. Now, this particular part of the biology, every part of our body operates very similar to a menstrual cycle, right? The way it works is tissue is added and tissue is removed, or tissue is removed and tissue is added. So this is like increased capacity, reduced capacity, reduced capacity, increased capacity. So in a woman's menstrual cycle, tissue is added to the walls of the uterus in order to facilitate pregnancy. If she doesn't get pregnant, and basically then the tissue is removed, right? So with bleeding and cramps, and that's basically the way the biology functions. So I had tissue added here, right? I had a tumor on my jaw here, right? So I switched off the cancer, and the way you do that, say, oh, okay, I know that I'm having tissue added to this part of my jaw because I had a fight with my wife. And that basically, when you consciously connect the cause of the problem with the symptoms of the problem, then it switches off this, right? Now, to remove that extra capacity, the tissue minus, basically the body does that with tuberculosis mycobacteria. So what does that do? Basically, it rots the flesh, right? So for a 4-month period after I switched the cancer off, I had both the taste and the smell of rotting flesh in my mouth and my sinuses, right? And I can promise you that is also not very pleasant. Right? Literally putting a rotting piece of meat in your mouth for 4 months and just sucking on it, just so you can appreciate it, right? And once the extra tissue had been removed, between the tumor on my jaw and the tuberculosis mycobacteria, all of the teeth fell out on this side of my jaw, right? So then I had no teeth, right? And half of my jaw got destroyed, right? So then I had to have a 5-hour reconstructive surgery, right? With a bone graft on my jaw and implants, all of these teeth here, they're all false, right? They're all implants. Basically, the end of the surgery, I had one painkiller, and then I had like 35 stitches in the jaw, right? Went out to get the bone graft and all the implants, all that sort of stuff, right? So I took a painkiller at the end of the surgery, and then I took a painkiller the night of the surgery. Now, honestly, I hate taking medication, right? All medication, right? Painkillers, everything, right? So I'm sitting there and I woke up next morning and it's like, ba-dum, 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 like this on my jaw, right? So I'm sitting there. Now, I'd switched off pain from backache and toothache and all sorts of emotional driven conflicts in my life, right? But I'd never switched off pain from physical trauma, i.e. surgery, right? So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I wonder if I can switch this pain off, right? So it's going ba-dum, 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 like this, right? So I'm sitting there and I thought, okay, Danny, what is the biological purpose of pain? Okay, so the biological purpose of pain is to stop you using something so that it has a time, space, and energy to heal, right? And you can test this for yourself, right? Next time you cut your finger when you're in the kitchen or you're using your knife in the woods or something, right? It will swell up and become painful, right? Now, if you don't touch it, there'll be no pain, right? As soon as you start trying to use that finger, you know, you want to mow the lawn or do the dishes or something or whatever, right? As soon as you start trying to use it, ba-dum, 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 right? Because it'll stop you saying, what nature's saying is, this is broken. It needs to be fixed. Don't use it. When it's better, and once you go through the itching and the scab comes off and all that, it's all better. You can use it again and it's fine, right? But whilst it's healing, you need to leave it alone so that it can heal. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, right, okay. Now, Jeremy, I've got no teeth, right? And I'm sitting there thinking, I can't chew anything, right? Because I've got no teeth. All of these teeth on this side are all falling out, right? I'm sitting there thinking, right, okay, I've got no teeth. Okay, let me give this a go. I'm sitting there. I said, okay, subconscious mind, I know that the biological purpose of pain is to give my body the time, space, and energy to heal. I've got no teeth. I'm not going to use this side for chewing. Switch off the pain. Bang. Gone. Pain gone. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. It's amazing, right? The conscious mind controls the subconscious mind, right? So when you know the biological purpose of something, I'm saying to my subconscious mind, right, I know I can't use this, right? I can't use this. And the purpose of the pain is to stop me from using it. I'm not going to use it. Switch the pain off. And bang, the pain just switched off like that, right? Now, I was amazed. Beautiful, right? Now, you know what happens, right? You're eating and I'm trying to chew on this side, right? And then food, you know, accidentally goes around this side, right? And then all of a sudden it's ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. And I'm like, ah, damn. I'm like, sorry, subconscious mind. That was a mistake, right? Because you can't use it, right? The deal is you've got to give it the time and space to heal, right? So you can't use it. So, and then I've broken the deal because the food's gone around this side and I'm using it. So then, ba-dum, 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 like this, right? So I'm like, sorry, subconscious mind. That was a mistake. Let's go back to the old deal. I won't use this. Switch off the pain. Bang. Pain gone, right? Now, I slept for 22 hours a day for 3 weeks. I went back to the doctor to have all of the stitches removed, right? And the doctor said to me, Danny, he said, did you take the antibiotics I gave you? And I said, no, doctor. Did you take the painkillers I gave you? No, doctor. He said, oh, God, Danny. So then he took all of the stitches out this side, right? Completely healed. No pain. 5-hour reconstructive surgery, right? No pain. No antibiotics, no painkillers, just slept for 3 weeks and it completely healed.
What are you saying? Are you saying that we we should strive to be basically in a perpetual state of Zen.
No, not at all. Absolutely not. Do you think I'm Zen? What do you think? I got all this white hair from you.
But I mean, isn't that what it's about, though?
No, it's not. It's not. It's not at all. What do we have to do in life? We have to address the cause of a problem and we have to understand the purpose of it, right? The cause of this basically was the five-hour surgery I went through, right? The biological purpose of this pain was to stop me from using it so that it had the time, space, and energy to heal. Right. So I've done a drug deal with my subconscious mind. I've said, right, okay, I know the biological purpose of this. You put the pain here so that I don't use it so it can heal. Right. I'm not going to use it. I've got no teeth. Right. How can I use it? I've got no teeth. I can't chew anything. You can't chew just with one set of teeth at the bottom. Right. I can't use it. So I've said to my subconscious mind, I'm not going to use it. Switch off the pain. I don't need the pain for you to stop me from using it. I'm not going to use it. So I understand the biological purpose of pain, and then I can switch that pain off. Even when, do you want one more crazy one? This is my first one. IBS, right? I had IBS for 15 years, right? I don't know if you have IBS, right? Crippling stomach cramps and loose motions, terrible stomach gas, etc., right? So 2015, I was on my way to do my practitioner's course. I was on my way to Toronto. My then girlfriend was coming to meet my family for the first time in London. So she flew from Santiago de Chile to London, and I flew from Bombay to London. We met in London. My family chucked this big party in a garden for everyone, whole family, to meet my new life partner, right? And as soon as I got there, within a couple of hours, I started to get terrible intestinal cramps, right? Jeremy, worst I've ever had in my life, right? Worst I've ever had in my life. I was on the toilet every hour for 72 hours. I was in so much pain. I was almost passing out on the toilet with stomach cramps, right? With intestinal cramps, right? 72 hours I had these cramps. And my girlfriend said to me, come on, Danny, let's see if we can use these medical discoveries that you're studying to see if we can solve this problem. They were laying on the bed in my parents' house, right? And she said, right, okay, Danny, what causes pain in the intestines? And I said, it's something that Dr. Hummer called, it's an indigestible anger conflict, right? So it's a problem you can't solve, right? And she said, okay, when does the pain start? I said, well, the pain starts when you solve it. She said, okay, what problem have we solved by coming to London? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, we had a party in the garden. Everybody got pissed and stuff. And, you know, we had fun. And there's no family confab, you know, problem solving roundtable sort of session to point at. So we're laying on my bed and I'm literally, as I'm folded in half, right, in these stomach cramps. And she said, come on, you've got to think what problem we've solved. I'm like, I've got no idea what problem we've solved, right? And I'm laying there for an hour, right? I go, and it's folded in half, right? And I said to her, I think I know what problem we've solved. And she said, okay. So a bit of background, my ex-wife and my family used to fight like cat and dog, right? My ex-wife was blue blood from India. My family are working class from England. So there was social divide, race divide, all the divides, right? It was horrible, right? It was like managing a rock and a hard place. So they loved my new partner. I actually got there and they all got pissed and had fun and everything, right? So I was laying on the bed with my parents and I said, I think we've resolved the conflict that my partner fights with my family, right? And I'm laying there, and one second I'm folding, I was folded in half, stomach cramps, right? Next minute, bang, my stomach goes diggly, 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 poof. And I said to my girlfriend, I feel fine. She said, what are you talking about? I said, I don't know, I feel fine. My stomach just went diggly, diggly, diggly. The pain just disappeared, and now I feel fine. She said, come on, don't be stupid. I'm like, well, I mean, I hadn't even done my practitioner's course at that point. Right? I didn't really know what I was doing. So I didn't really know how to use these medical discoveries. But basically what happens is when you connect the cause of a problem with the symptoms of a problem, it triggers a cathartic healing, right? That you cannot explain until you experience it. And when you experience it, it's just like switching it off like a light switch, right? And it was mind-blowing. I'm like, oh, my God. Same thing that happened in the cramps in my body, right? I mean, I resolved a conflict and my, you know, those knots in my body. Nature was trying to stop me from walking away from my soulmate. Right, I'm walking in the wrong direction in life. That's filling my body full of these cramps, right, and all of these knots in my muscles, so that I couldn't walk away from my soulmate. It's trying to slow me down from going in the wrong direction, right? So I was laying on the bed, and bang, my something diggly licked, and pain was gone. I'm laying, said, okay, let's wait for an hour. We waited for an hour, nothing happened. 2 hours, nothing happened. One day, nothing. I nearly never got on. I had to go to Toronto, right, to complete my practitioner's course. I nearly couldn't go because I couldn't be more than like 10 seconds away from the bathroom, right? So I switched off that IBS, and it's never come back since. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Mind over matter.
It's not mind over matter. It's when you consciously connect to cause of a problem.
Right.
My partner fighting with my family.
Mm.
So what did Dr. Hummer call that? An indigestible anger conflict. So it's a problem you're angry about that you can't solve, right? Yeah,
but
so,
that's why I said earlier when I spoke about being Zen, aren't you more likely to resolve a lot of those issues if you stay, for example, out in the countryside where there are fewer people, fewer toxicities, general increase in happiness, that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, when you live in the Welsh that I live in, where there's no such thing as disease, right? I mean, it tends to make you zen, right? Because you have no fear of any disease, right? So, I mean, in a way that you're right, but frankly, I mean, I still got bone cancer in my arm and my shoulder during COVID, right? I still got rheumatoid arthritis in my arm during COVID. I still got a herniated disc in my neck, right? So a herniated disc is an intellectual conflict. It's like being forced to bow against your will, right? Because of all of the business, right? And my wife's a diplomat, so she was forced to take it, and I was not. And
you are welcome to say it. This doesn't go to YouTube.
Oh, okay. The COVID vaccine, right? Yeah. 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 It's just my mum just died from the COVID vaccine. But anyway, I couldn't stop her from taking it, unfortunately. So, yeah, but during COVID, Jeremy, I was invited to join the American Frontline Doctors, right? So I was in the American Frontline Doctors that morphed into the World Doctors Alliance during COVID, and they were taking the COVID vials and putting them under electron microscopes, right, with all of those self-assembling graphene structures and all of that luciferase and all of that horror show that was in that shot, right? So basically, I was trying to scream that from the rooftops, right? But most people thought I was a nutter, including my mum. And sadly, she just died from it. So,
I'm sorry to hear, Danny. Can I ask you a question? When there is a tumor, though, I mean, that is a fairly brutal place to be when you have a cancer. It's not a brutal place to be.
No, nature doesn't make tumors. Nature doesn't make malignant or benign. Okay, so same in Dr. Hummer's testicle, right? It made a tumor, right? It didn't. It was functional tissue that was designed to increase his testosterone and sperm production. You have a tumor in your breast, right? When your child or somebody, a loved one, gets sick, right? Basically, nature is increasing your capacity of a biological function, right? So you have a tumor in your breast, right? It's not. It's nature is giving you back your ability to lactate. And the same when you look at every part of the biology, basically nature will increase that capacity. That's what doctors call a tumor. It's not. Nature does not make tumors. Doctors make tumors to generate business. That's it. Nothing else. Nature, in your lifetime, Jeremy, nature will not make a single mistake, right? When you sit on an aeroplane and you're sitting there saying, oh, this sinks and sucks and everything else, right? Then you'll get a sinus infection when you get off it. That's all it is. If your, God forbid, your child gets murdered and you get a tumor on your testicle, which will increase your capacity to be able to replace that child that you've just lost, right? That's a tumor. It's not. It's just nature increasing your functional tissue or reactivating your functional tissue in order to help you to solve a crisis in life. And that is it. Nothing else.
It's quite a paradigm shift, what you're saying. Yeah,
I know. I agree. I understand. I 100% understand. I mean, it's, you know, it's taken me 12 years of, I mean, I said my starting point was severe skepticism. And honestly, my strongest advice to anybody is to be skeptical, right? Don't believe a word I'm saying. Do not believe a word I'm saying, right? Because you shouldn't. You cannot have conviction in anything until you've tested it for yourself. Right, until you've gone through and triggered cathartic healing or switched off. You know, if you'd have got off that plane to, oh, now I've got a runny nose because I had a stinking conflict because the journey on the plane was stinking and sucks, right? Bang, you'll switch that off like a light switch, right? As soon as you connect the cause of the problem with the symptoms of the problem, then bang, you'll switch it off. But you have to do that for yourself.
What happens in a situation, you know, if you go to a pond and you can see that the type of fungus that sits on the top, I don't know what you call that, but so you know what I'm talking about. You can see it floating on top of the water and you drink some of that and you get sick. What's going on there?
Well, I mean, if there's anything in that water, then it comes into the category of poisoning, right? Same way if you drink...
Right, so then there's a toxicity.
If you drink chemotherapy, guess what's going to happen? It's going to make you sick, right?
Okay, so you're saying poisoning is a real thing though?
Poisoning's a real thing, yeah. I mean, if you let doctors put chemotherapy in your body, right? I mean, that's mustard gas, right? I mean, you're going to know that.
There's a lot of information here to take in. Give me some nuggets of wisdom, some sound bites that I can use and think about.
You can only ever solve any problem in life by addressing the cause of the problem. Okay? That rule applies in business and that rule applies in health. Okay? What we don't realize is that every healing modality today, both conventional and alternative, are all systems of symptomatic treatment. The body of medical knowledge, Germanic New Medicine or Germanische Heilkund, Germanic healing knowledge, is the only modality that I've been able to find in two decades that enables you to understand the cause, the life cause of a problem with a sniper's rifle. And you can only ever solve any problem in life by addressing the cause, okay? So in the lady's situation, her son gets hit by a car, she has a lump in her breast. That is nature reactivating her ability to lactate so she can breastfeed her child back to health again. So the cause of the problem is a child getting sick. The biological program is a lump in her breast. If she needs to use that breast, according to its biological purpose, nurse the child back to health again. Once that biological program has been fulfilled, the lump nature will remove the tumor in the same way that it put it there. It has a biological purpose. When you understand that biological purpose, it all starts to make sense.
Germanic New Medicine. How can I find out more?
I've written a book. This is terminal cancer as a misdiagnosis. This is an introduction to the body of medical knowledge. You can pick this up on Amazon. It's written in plain English so that anybody with no prior knowledge can read and understand it. I have a resource page on my website, danny-carroll.com, that I've been collating over the last 20 years that will guide you around the entire community, so you can go to one place. It's like a roadmap to get around the community. So that will guide you all the way around. And that's all you need.
Danny Carroll, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
My pleasure, Jeremy.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please visit supportgerm.com.